The unsurpassed, penetrating, and perfect truth is seldom met with, even in 100,000 myriad kalpas. Can see and hear it, we can remember and accept it. I vow to make the Buddha's truth one with myself. Homage to the Buddha, homage to the Dharma, homage to the Sangha. For the last talk, I'm going to talk about the Four Noble Truths and Nirvana. So there's a sutta in the Samyutta Nikaya entitled the Simsapa Grove, or sometimes it's called A Handful of Leaves. So the Buddha was staying in a grove of Simsapa trees. He picked up a few of the Simsapa leaves from the ground and he asked the monks that were with him, which is more numerous, these few Simsapa leaves that I have taken with my hand or those above in the Simsapa grove? The monks replied, the Simsapa leaves that the Blessed One has taken in his hands are few, but those above in the Simsapa grove are indeed more numerous. Then the Buddha said, so too, monks, that which I have directly known but have not expounded to you is more numerous. And why, monks, have I not expounded this? Because this is unbeneficial. This does not lead to disenchantment, to dispassion, to cessation, to peace, to direct knowledge, to nirvana. Therefore, I have not expounded it. And what, monks, have I expounded? I have expounded this is suffering. I have expounded this is the origin of suffering. I have expounded, this is the cessation of suffering. I have expounded, this is the way to the cessation of suffering. And why, monks, have I expounded this? Because this is beneficial. This pertains to the basis for spiritual life. This leads to disenchantment, to dispassion, to cessation, to peace, to direct knowledge, to enlightenment, to nirvana. Bhikkhu Bodhi, in his recent book, Noble Truths, Noble Path, says, modern exponents of Buddhism often assume that the Four Noble Truths are elemental teachings intended for newcomers to the Dharma. So elemental means basic and powerful, but not subtle or refined. So Bhikkhu Bodhi continues, but the Buddha himself did not teach them in such a way. Rather, he saw them as suitable only for those whose minds were ripe enough to understand them clearly and directly. So, obviously, the Buddha really thought that the Four Noble Truths were this important teaching that we just didn't leave behind. When the Buddha taught, he usually began, this is with new people, by talking about generosity and morality first. Then he would proceed to talk about karmic consequence of actions and rebirth. Next, he might speak about the downside of sensual pleasure and the benefit of restraint and renunciation. Only then, when he knew that the minds of his listeners were sufficiently open, trusting, and free from obstacles, would he proceed to explain the Four Noble Truths. So the Four Noble Truths are considered the special Dharma teaching of the Buddhas. They are what all the Buddhas of the past have taught. How fortunate we are to have heard them in this lifetime. The Four Noble Truths, like the precepts, are not a teaching we graduate from and leave behind for the higher teachings. They are the foundation of all the Buddha's Dharma. So in the Peaked House Sutta, the Buddha says, we can't build the upper story of a house without first having built the first story. Without having realized the Four Noble Truths as they are, we can't make an end to suffering. And if you want to build an upper story on the house, you don't take away the understory. You know, the house would just collapse. It's the foundation. With the Four Noble Truths, we need to study them in detail in our everyday life, the same as we do with the precepts. As I said earlier in the week, we all have a PhD in suffering. It takes meditation, study, practice in our daily lives, investigating, and detective work to connect the dots. What does this action, this attitude of mind, this type of speech cause? Is it wholesome or unwholesome? Blameless or blamable? Praised or censured by the wise? Does it lead to welfare and happiness or not? The Buddha assigns specific tasks to each of the Four Noble Truths. The truth of suffering needs to be fully understood. The truth of the origin of suffering, that's craving, desire, holding on, pushing away, needs to be abandoned. The truth of the cessation of suffering needs to be realized through the doing away with craving, desire, holding on, and pushing away. And the truth of the Noble Eightfold Path is developed by practice in our everyday lives. Thus, we can fully understand suffering, the abandonment of craving and the cessation of suffering in our lives. The Buddha taught the Four Noble Truths because it was through them that he realized for himself an end to suffering. He ventured out to teach others these truths because he knew there were beings with little dust in their eyes. We could understand them for ourselves, bring an end to suffering. Bhikkhu Bodhi continues in his Noble Truths, Noble Path. The overcoming of dukkha requires that craving, the cause of suffering, be uprooted in its entirety, an attainment that the Third Noble Truth declares a real possibility. Dukkha comes to an end with the remainderless fading away and cessation of that same craving, the craving that maintains the rounds of rebirths. The Buddha grew old, experienced illness, died, and he knew loss and grief in his life. His two chief disciples, Shariputra and Moggallana, died before him. The Buddha said to Ananda, it is as though from a mighty hardwood tree a large branch should break off. So has Shariputra now passed away from the great and sound community of bhikkhus. Indeed, Ananda, of that which is born, come into being, put together, and so is subject to disillusion, how should it be said that it should not depart? That indeed is not possible. Therefore, Ananda, be an island unto yourself, a refuge unto yourself, seeking no external refuge. With the Dharma as your island, the Dharma as your refuge, seeking no other refuge. So these consequences of impermanent existence were not the cause of suffering for the Buddha. They were just the way it is. I'm sure the Buddha grieved and dearly missed Shariputra and Moggallana. Although there are abundant opportunities in life for joy and happiness, you know, joy and happiness exist. There still is an underlying sense that things are unstable and subject to change. We just do not know what's going to happen, how much time we have. In his great compassion, the Buddha offers us a way to a release of suffering and transcendence of it. The Buddha, through his relentless training, found something beyond what is born, made, conditioned. The Buddha found the deathless. So both in the Udana and the Iti-Vutaka, the Buddha is quoted as saying, there is, bhikkhus, a not born, a not brought to being, a not made, a not conditioned. If, bhikkhus, there were no not born, not brought into being, not made, not conditioned, no escape would be discerned from what is born, brought to being, made, conditioned. But since there is a not born, a not brought to being, a not made, a not conditioned, therefore an escape is discerned from what is born, brought to being, made, conditioned. So Rip Master Jiyu knew this to be true for herself. She shared this teaching with us for us to find it true for ourselves. We all experience things differently, not radically so, but a bit differently. Thankfully, throughout the Pali Canon, the Buddha uses a wide range of words and analogies to explain the end of suffering. Here's a few. So he calls the end of suffering the unformed, the unconditioned, the end, the truth, the other shore, the subtle, the everlasting, the invisible, the deathless, the blessed, safety, the wonderful, the marvelous, nirvana, purity, freedom, the island, the refuge, the beyond. And actually, he uses many, many more as you go through the Pali Canon. In the Sutta Pitaka, there's a story of Kappa's question. So Kappa comes to the Buddha and says that there are people stuck midstream in terror and the fear of the rush of the river of being and death and decay. Decay actually overwhelms them. Kappa implores the Buddha for their sake to give a response to this. And he says, is there an island, a solid ground beyond the reach of all this pain? The Buddha replies, for the sake of those people stuck in the middle of the river of being, overwhelmed by death and decay, I will tell you where to find solid ground. There is an island which you cannot go beyond. It is a place of nothingness, a place of non-possession and of non-attachment. It is the total end of death and decay, and this is why I call it nirvana. There are people who in mindfulness have realized this and are completely cooled here and now. They do not become slaves working for Mara for death. They cannot fall into his power. So nirvana is sometimes referred to as the complete cessation of the three fires of greed, hate, and delusion. Does this mean that we have to be perfect to find the unconditioned? I think it means that we have to train with regularity, determination, and confidence in the three treasures. Keep the precepts as best we can. Develop the Eightfold Path. Nirvana will actually take care of itself. We can realize what the Buddha and River Master Jiyu found for ourselves. We just have to get at it. As I was doing my morning service at the Compassionate Friend when I was preparing for this retreat, I was struck in the reciting of the Scripture of Great Wisdom, which I did each morning, that what is being described in the Scripture of Great Wisdom is nirvana. For River Master Jiyu, it was important that we not feel that we had gone beyond. Nirvana is not beyond. Nirvana is a place from which we continue to benefit ourselves and the world. Nirvana is here and now. So better to go on, always becoming Buddha. When I did the founder ceremony at the Hermitage, which I would do each morning, in gratitude for our founders and the Hermitage, I would recite the adoration of the Buddha's relics. So my wish for you, and actually for myself, comes from that scripture. And it says, let us only do good for all living things that we may possess the true mind. Let us do only pure deeds that we may enter the peaceful world, which is unchanging great wisdom. Let us pay homage eternally to the Buddha. So all of us have confirming experiences in our training. These can help us to know we are on the right path. I think I mentioned this at one of the discussions, but D.T. Suzuki, one of the early pioneers of Zen Buddhism in the West, said that once or twice you have a big experience, but thousands of times you have the smaller moments that make you want to dance. So some of us go like a rocket. A lot of us are just like a dimmer switch, our daily training turning the dimmer switch brighter and brighter. In some ways, the dimmer switch is safer. Regardless of our experience, we need to do the daily training and keep at the training. Direct knowledge, a knowing of the not born, the not conditioned, comes as a result of daily practice. It's not like we need to venture to some distant land. It's within us. One day, this will be true for ourselves, and that will be enough. Reverend Master Jiyu always used to say, "It's enough for me to know the cosmic Buddha." Homage to all the Buddhas in all worlds. Homage to all the Bodhisattvas in all worlds. Homage to the scripture of great wisdom.